And we're starting one, two. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And with me tonight, we have convened an Algonquin roundtable of wit and whimsy. First off, my frequent co-host, Mr. Adrian Smith from Great Britain, or what do you call that, dear old lady? Is that what you call
it? Blighty, yes. Yeah, dear old Blighty.
You charming Brits and your colloquialisms. I never heard that before. Well, cool. Adrian is a great artist. He does a lot of work for me at Fainting Goat. And Adrian, what's your website in case folks want to check out your etchings?
The best thing is my DeviantArt page, which is MonkeyXUK. There's lots of stuff on there, DeviantArt.com.
Okay, cool, cool. Second on the table, we have Mr. Jason Toundrow, a.k.a. Dr. Comics. You can find him at blogspot.com under Dr. Comics, where he says lots of very interesting things about comic books. And Jason, it is great to have you back.
Well, it's wonderful to be here. If we are a round table and you have the hat, you must be Arthur. And we have one more Brit, so you get to take your pick because it's your home country. So you get to pick whoever you want to be.
I get to be anybody. That's quite good.
Do you want to be Lancelot or Merlin, or who do you want to be?
Yeah, Merlin sounds pretty cool.
Merlin sounds pretty cool. Okay. Chris, our third get, you outrank me, so you also get next dibs.
Oh, wow.
Christopher McLaughlin.
Most days I feel a great kinship with Sir Robin because, you know, I'm bravely running away.
All right. Holy Grail reference for the win. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And for anyone who didn't hear me, that was Mr. Christopher McLaughlin, who's written all kinds of cool stuff for Deadlands, as well as for Mutants and Masterminds, and I'm sure various other projects.
Yes, just everything from the WWE role-playing game to...
Is that the Know Your Role game?
I'm sorry?
Was that the one that the slogan was Know Your Role?
Yes.
I think that would almost work better as a narrative system.
Well, There are other games out there that did that, but the time D20 was hot, and we had one of the absolutely most phenomenally game designers of all time, Tony Lee, you know, working on that, and I really, really loved how he adapted D20 for that. So, yeah, I can totally see a narrative system, but by God, it's a Tony Lee design. You really can't take issue with that as far as I'm concerned.
And I kind of missed the D20 boom. Oh, well.
If there was any genre where you should never roll a die, it should be a professional wrestling game, right? I mean, where everything is completely choreographed and staged.
Well, my equally brilliant game designer friend, Matt Gwynn, has a game out called Kayfabe, which is all about it's fake and you're basically using your backstage politics to look good in the match.
We figure
he already had that cornered, so we would do one for the people that knew that stuff is real.
Yeah. Right. Right on.
Yep. And yeah, there's a Santa Claus.
Yes.
So, hey, and just the hat reference for anyone at home who isn't on the Skype conversation right now, my Skype icon has me wearing a ridiculously large top hat that I actually purchased last Halloween at the Molly Brown House here in lovely Denver, Colorado. So, it's a little silly. But
it's what Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter should be wearing.
Indeed he should. Mike, are you going to be at the Denver Comic Con in a couple of weeks?
I'm planning on it. Gail Simone's going to be there, isn't she?
Well, I am presenting a paper there.
Well, Jason, we should get together, and I should get drunk, and we should talk, because I know you didn't know much of a drinker, but we should definitely hook up.
We should definitely do that. I'm going to be presenting a paper on, I think I'm on Thursday. But yeah, there's an academic conference that lasts for 2 days prior to the comic conference, but in the same building. And
This is in mid-June? When is this?
Yeah. It's like the 10th through the 15th or something like that, 11th through the 15th.
Well, let's talk after the podcast and get some details exchanged.
Yes, that would be fun.
Nice.
I had forgotten you were in Denver, so I look forward to
it. Well, I'm just north of it, but I'm only about 20 minutes away. So.
Oh.
All right, cool. Well, hey, guys, we're here to talk about comics and occasionally whatever tangents take our fancy. And as it's really effing late in the UK, let's start with Adrian and ask him what he's been reading these days.
Well, funny enough, I was due to have a delivery of all this month's stuff today, and it didn't arrive. So I'm a month behind everything at the moment, which is pretty crappy. So no alternate universe Barack Obama Superman as of yet, and none of that. So no Earth 2 yet either, which is even worse. So that's quite terrible.
You didn't miss much.
Really? That's depressing.
It didn't do a lot for me. In the first three pages, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman are all dead. And everyone spends the rest of the issue kind of introducing the new characters. You know, that universe's version of Barry Allen, or was it Barry Allen, or was it Golden Age Flash?
Jay Garrick.
Alan Scott, and you got a little bit with, I want to say the woman who will become the Huntress and Supergirl. So.
Night of Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't really. I'm a big fan of Earth 2 and the JSA characters, and I picked it up, and my first thought was, man, those $3 could have bought me a tasty Hostess pie.
Yeah, but it's Robinson, isn't it? Well, I have faith every station Robinson, to be honest, after reading Starman.
Yeah.
So that legacy kind of character, I'm really hoping they do something really well with it. So.
Starman. And let's be honest, nobody's talking about issue one of that comic.
Well, there wasn't much to talk about, really.
Well, issue two is attracting a fair bit of noise.
True.
Oh,
yeah. True.
Chris, why don't you tell us why that is?
Well, if the internet is to be believed, and seriously, when has the internet ever lied to us?
Never.
DC's promised iconic character that is going to come out of the reboot, suddenly gay, is going to be the Golden Age Green Lantern, Alan Scott.
Yeah.
And supposedly that all comes out in issue two.
Yeah, so one of my colleagues in the academic world, Kane Anderson, who's written and done a lot of work academically on Superman and on queerness in superheroes, has written really interestingly about this. When they had to choose somebody to be gay, notice it's like the alternate Earth version of Green Lantern. You know, it's not like one of the mainstream characters. It's not the real Superman or the real Batman or the real Green Lantern or Flash or Wonder Woman or, you know, any one of those other great characters that we could name who would be interesting if they were gay. It's an alternate version to show that, you know, the gay, we still don't have to treat the gayness seriously. It doesn't have to actually be mainstream. It's just a sort of a token reference so that, you know, well, yeah, he's gay, but he's not the real Green Lantern, so it's okay.
Yeah, so a lot of people say he's not iconic enough, that people outside the comics world don't know who he is.
Exactly.
To people inside the comics world, he's the first ever Green Lantern, so that's quite a heavy thing.
Yeah.
But then again, this is not Alan Scott, the old Alan Scott, now revealed to be gay. This is a new version of Alan Scott from an alternate universe from the new DC universe, so it's just another character called Alan Scott who happens to be now gay rather than married to whoever he's married to with his sons. I mean, I'm going to miss Jade, of course, if she doesn't come along. Sad.
Go ahead.
Go, carry on.
Well, I was just, I'm convinced they picked Green Lantern for this, Alan Scott for this, because the continuity problems with his two children have gotten so messed up over the past 20 years, they decided to just erase the whole problem by making him gay.
Well, you know, I mean, Oscar Wilde was gay and had two children.
What? Oh, yeah. Does Alan Scott have kids in Earth 2?
He had maybe 7 panels in this issue, so I guess we'll find out. Did it come out today, or when did it come out?
Yeah, today, I think, yeah.
And I didn't get to the comic store today, so. Yeah, I don't know if they referenced or not. He seems like he's breaking up with his college girlfriend at the end of it. It's Jay Garrick who's breaking up with his college girlfriend at the end of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't. It does smack of tokenism. And I hate to say that because I'd like to have a well-written gay character, but didn't we have some of those already in Secret Six?
Batwoman, anyone?
Batwoman, Scandal Savage, they kind of done this already and done it pretty well.
Gail Simone noted on it never came out in the context of the book, but she noted in Twitter that she always wrote Catman as bisexual. She pulled a what was Harry Potter's teacher? Dumbledore.
Dumbledore.
Dumbledore or Catman.
Yeah. I don't mind Catman being gay, but I'd rather it come out in the book than the author tells you later, this was going to happen.
But, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Funny enough, the UK press picked up on it when it was announced that they were going to announce a gay DC character, and obviously the first person was Superman. And then they announced it, also announced, fictitious, completely wrong, that Northstar was the first ever gay superhero. Which is completely wrong, straight away, isn't it? Unless I'm mistaken, but...
Adam Fadel.
he's not the first gay superhero, but he is the first gay hero in a mainstream superhero comic.
Yeah.
There were a couple of gay characters before him, but nobody remembers them.
It all depends on how you classify Madame Fatal.
Tell me about Madame Fatal, Chris.
Madame Fatal was one of the, okay, first of all, I love quality comics from the 40s because they were on acid before there was actually acid, some of their character concepts. And one of the more outre things they ever got published was they had a character called Madame Fatal, who, was a guy who's, he got past the old, hey, I'll put on a pair of glasses and nobody will recognize me secret identity thing because when he chose to fight crime, he dressed up as an old lady.
Right, yes. Okay.
Now, he was never explicitly stated as gay, but let's face it, a guy who dresses up like a chick to fight crime, that's pretty out there for the 1940s.
Listen,
just make one more thing. I know that transvestism does not always equate to homosexuality, but I'm just saying it's pretty far out. It's a pretty far out concept for 1940.
Yeah.
I swear that character, or something very similar to that character, was in Robinson's run of Starman, or The Shade. That a guy dressed up as a woman to defeat crime.
Well, don't think it's mentioned at some point.
Yeah, because I've only just read it quite recently, and it does kind of stick out as kind of being, something that's quite unusual you don't see every day, so yeah.
Well, DC owns all those quality characters, don't they?
Well, okay, all the quality characters are public domain. The only thing that DC really, really owns is the stuff that's been done with them since 1970 or so.
Oh, I see. But
I could go out and publish a Madame Fatal comic tomorrow if I wanted to.
Okay. Well, along the same lines, if we're talking about early gay characters that possibly predate North Star, Stan Lee, whose memory is highly suspect, but Stan Lee has gone on interviews and publicly stated quite casually that one of Nick Fury's Howling Commandos was always gay. And he's talking about the French guy who carried the umbrella everywhere. What was his name? Like Pinky or something? I can't remember his name.
I was going to say Dum Dum Dugan.
No, not Dum Dum.
No, that's Nosh. They give away. Yeah.
But I was listening to an interview one time with Stan, and they were talking about, I think it was when one of the Spider-Man movies had come out or something. I don't even remember what it was about. And he said, oh, yeah, we had gay characters when I was writing comics. You know, one of the Howling Commandos, he carried this umbrella everywhere, and he wore a silly beret. And, I mean, clearly he was gay. Well, there was nothing in the book that ever said he was gay.
Okay, first of all, Pinky Pinkerton was actually English.
Oh, yeah, English. That's him. Yeah, Pinky Pinkerton, that's him. Yeah, the English guy.
Brought to you by the magic of Wikipedia.
Yeah. And that book was in the 60s, right? So certainly predates North Star, but antedates Madame Fatal. But it's the same deal. Yeah. But do they count? Do they count as gay or not?
Again, never brought up, was it? So, you could just say Sherlock Holmes was gay. Was that? Well, we never referenced it in any of the novels, but obviously he was.
But no, for those that are interested, there are documented gay characters before North Star who are clearly gay in their books, but they are not published by Marvel or DC, and they are not mainstream. But North Star does get that dubious distinction.
Does North Star predate the gay couple in Watchmen?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, a couple of years.
Okay,
You're talking about Hooded Justice and Captain Metropolis.
Yeah, because in my own mental timeline, I seem to remember having read Watchmen and then North Star came out.
Oh. Well, North Star was written gay when he was in Alpha Flight. So Byrne had to sort of hint at it. When Byrne was writing Alpha Flight, there was this period where the book would go through sort of a phase where every issue was basically about two characters of the team. And he would just sort of rotate through the entire team, and they never did anything together as a team. But in the North Star issue, he's hanging out with his best friend, his fellow French-Canadian, and there's a lot of innuendo there that we now can read back, and we can see that Byrne's trying to sort of reveal that the character is gay without coming out right and saying he's gay. But as far as North Star's like actual coming out of the closet, I believe you're right. I believe it is Astro Watch.
Yeah, that's according to this, North Star was in Alpha Flight 83.
Yeah.
And Watchmen's 85. But obviously, yeah, I think the whole actually revealed to be a gay character as such was late 90s, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah. It was a bad time. And the story is actually awful. I mean, the story in which North Star comes out is eminently forgettable.
Well, if we can be honest, there was a lot of Marvel that was pretty awful in the late 90s.
Oh, there was a lot.
In fact,
The only thing worse than 90s Marvel, 90s DC.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Well, guys, speaking of DC, I am personally very trepidatious about reading Before Watchmen because I don't want you to be cursed by Alan Moore.
He's politely asked everyone who reads Before Watchmen to never read anything else he ever writes again.
Which isn't a problem because I've kind of gotten over Alan Moore. I mean, I like his stuff, but I've read so much of it, I read the first two pages and I'm like, okay, it's an Alan Moore book. I know where it's going to be on page 22 when I put it back down.
Really?
You're not going to buy the last League of Extraordinary Gentlemen book?
I love them. I really do. It's just, it's like Metallica when I was a kid. I listened to the albums just back to back to back to back to back.
Yeah, it's just like Metallica. I totally agree.
Well, no, the point I'm making is that, and I know his rhythms, I know his usual subjects, I know his, dialogue patterns. I feel like I know him by the back of my hand. He's not.
Can we just describe that as countdown to butt sex reference?
My goodness.
What the hell are you talking about, Chris?
Alan Moore.
Yeah,
I mean that's his. That seems to be his one driving passion in literature these days.
Yeah, he does seem to mention he does seem to. That comes up a lot. Yeah,
I mean, if you were to do some kind of text search, I would like to know how far distant number two on most butt sex references in his body of work is. Because I'm guessing Alan Moore's got to have a triple-digit lead at this point over whoever's number two.
Well, you know, Chris, if I wasn't so scared of being cursed by him, I would look up Alan Moore via his agent and request an interview on this podcast so you could ask him that question.
Well, okay, but you got to understand. I'm only going to talk to Alan Moore if he lets me beat my $20 out of him with my actual copy of the Black Dossier.
You didn't like Black Dossier?
No.
Any particular reason?
Well,
just you had all the tech stuff in it that kind of made up the bulk of the stuff.
I love the fact that Alan Moore continues to be one of the most experimental guys in comics. Kidding aside, I will give him that. My big problem with it is by that point in the story, it's pretty much obvious to me that Mina Harker is Alan Moore's Mary Sue.
Right.
When she slapping around James Bond.
True, like
he's Andy Dick or something. You know, right there, you can tell it's an author that's way too much in love with a character.
I see.
And I would defend to anybody. And then this is just a personal thing to me, okay? Alan Moore, way more into Orlando than I am.
Orlando.
That's true. Orlando was in Black Dossier a lot, yeah.
Yes.
Orlando is revealed in the other books to be kind of an asshole, and so I take his appearances in the Black Dossier with a grain of salt because in Century he's a complete dick in virtually his every appearance and he's much less of a Mary Sue character than Mina, which I had never thought of, Chris, but I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean Mina is a fabulous character in the first two, but the third it's just. Wow, Alan, really? Seriously? And just, you know, I mean, but there are a lot of great touches in there. I love the Kerouac tribute that he has in there.
Yep.
And there's so many nice touches on it. But by the end of the day, it's like, oh, wow, another incredibly insignificant detail in Orlando's life. And, oh, wow, Mina Harker has just beaten up Jesus. All right, well, here we go. I mean, it just got out of, you know, for that, pan out that kind of coin for a hardcover book, I just was really, really let down by it.
Well,
we had to import it. In the UK, they did stock it. So the only way to get it was, like, if someone picked up a load of copies in the US.
I'll send you mine.
I've got it. I had to pay, like, an extra $5 or $10 on top of the actual cost of it.
Yeah,
I'd have sent you mine for shipping. Sent it to you. Who am I kidding? I just sent it to you.
I like the book. I found it pretty dense, and for a while in academia, in you know, us Ivory Tower comic scholars, we were heavily debating his use of the black sort of Sambo character at the end of that book, who's this sort of caricature of blackness.
That's the Gollywog.
Yeah.
And, you know about the Gollywog.
Yeah, I do. I didn't until I read the book, but once it came out, I did some research, and there was a lot of talking about it, and one of my colleagues, Mark Singer, who teaches in the English department at Howard University.
And he was great in Beastmaster. I'm sorry, please continue.
So, you know, actually, if you, his, Mark Singer's blog is called I Am Not the Beastmaster. because he's not that Mark Singer. He's the other Mark Singer. Anyway, he wrote a lot about how insulting he felt the whole use of the Gollywog character was, and this led us all to kind of figure out whether it was a really racist or whether it was just hilariously funny. And
the Gollywog used to be on Jam over here.
Yeah.
So it used to be the sponsor for the Jam. So to a lot of older people, it's just a character that happens to have a black coloration rather than a black character.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. Anyway, but I liked the book eventually when I worked my way through it. And now I think the 1984 stuff, all the George Orwell stuff, is just brilliant. I love all that stuff. But I really, really, really want to get back to what Mike was first talking about, which is the Before Watchmen. Can I talk about that just a little?
Sure, please.
So I'm in this fight about Before Watchmen right now. So that's why this is really timely, because, of course, the book's coming out next week. And I think that the debate over the Before Watchmen, there's two debates. One of the debate is over the context of the book. In other words, why did this book exist? And is this book morally or ethically bankrupt or not? And I think that we all agree that it is bankrupt. I mean, I think, aside from the few people at DC like Straczynski and a few other people who are defending the book, I think that fandom has largely agreed that this book is hugely insulting, that Alan's getting shafted, and that we all shouldn't read it. But ultimately, we're going to have to ask ourselves, is it good comics? And the only way that we can do that is if we read it.
Illegally from a Russian FTP site. I'm sorry, let's continue.
Yeah, wherever you want to read it, we're either going to judge the book by its cover, or we're going to judge it by what's inside. And so when someone asks me, well, are you going to read Before Watchmen? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm Dr. Comics, for fuck's sake. Of course I'm going to read it, because I can't talk about it analytically unless I read it. My credibility to talk about Before Watchmen would stop the minute I said, I haven't read it, but. Right?
True.
As soon as you say, I haven't read it, but, well, now you have zero authority. You know?
Okay, Jason, here's a $64,000 question.
Sure, go ahead.
If you were not Dr. Comics, if you were just mild, if you put aside your lab coat and you were just mild-mannered Jason Tondro,
yeah.
Did you read Before Watchmen?
No, I couldn't afford it. It's too much money. I don't have the money to spend on that kind of comic.
So that Russian FTP site is actually something you're familiar with. I understand.
Yeah, right. To be absolutely frank, I'm not looking forward to reading them. My favorite character in Watchmen is Night Owl. When I met Alan Moore 20 years ago, and got him to autograph my copy of Watchmen, the single issues, mind you, because it had not yet been collected. I got him to sign my copy of the Night Owl issue, you know, because Night Owl was my man. And they gave Night Owl to Straczynski.
See, that does worry me slightly, I must say.
That means you won't finish the miniseries.
And now, don't get me wrong, I watched Babylon 5 like a fanatic. I love that show. But Straczynski's comics fall flat. And I'm not just talking about Superman or Wonder Woman. I'm talking about everything going back to Rising Stars. which I read and hated. And so they've given my favorite character to, like, the guy who... Couldn't they have given him Rorschach? I mean, who can fuck up Rorschach?
Kevin Smith. Rob Liefeld.
That's it, yeah. Let's just hold our breath and see, yeah.
Oh, let me put... Let's put this in full context. Who could fuck up Rorschach? About half the people currently writing for DC.
You think so? I mean, he's so simple of a character.
Do you really want to read Scott Lobdell's or Howard Mackey's? The Rorschach clone, maybe?
All right, stop now. Yeah, all right. I see what you're saying. I see what you're
Rob Liefeld's Rorschach?
Yeah, see, covered.
I do love Kevin Smith, but I should be pointing out that he actually was offered before Watchmen and turned it down.
Really?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Lobdell, you're talking about
Smith.
Who was talking about, Rob Liefeld?
I was talking about Kevin Smith, actually, okay. But yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm gonna read at least some. I can't afford all of them, but I'm gonna buy some issues of Before Watchmen, and I will offset my karma by doing what everybody who reads Before Watchmen should do, and that is donating to the nonprofit charity The Hero Initiative, which fights for creator rights in comics.
And what's the website, Jason?
Well, I think it's just heroinitiative.com, but you can Google them. And this is the same answer to everybody who was complaining about watching The Avengers. Because, of course, the Kirby estate is getting zero from that movie.
It's actually heroinitiative.org.
There you go, .org. So if you are feeling guilty, as well you should, for spending money to support, you know, Marvel when Kirby is not getting a penny, then go to Hero Initiative and spend a number of dollars equal to your ticket price. And then you will be karma neutral.
Yeah.
You know,
do the Watchmen characters class as created characters by Moore, because technically speaking, they are the Charlton characters redressed.
Well, you know, the Charlton characters over that point, they're just such one-note ciphers for the most part.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Especially the Ditko is one.
It's, yeah.
You can see the influence, but you really, really have to squint really hard.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I think...
Nighthouse obviously like Batman, and more Batman than Blue Beetle at such as the time, isn't he, really?
The best treatment of this I ever saw was in Dennis Cohen and Denny O'Neill's Question series,
yep.
When the Question bought a copy of Watchmen and read it on the pages. And he decided he thought Rorschach was the shit, and he started to try to act like Rorschach.
That is briefly meta.
If you have never read this comic, it is brilliant. Anyway, he tries to act like Rorschach, and he proceeds to get the shit kicked out of him.
The Question, poor guy.
And it reveals that you know, you can't. It doesn't work in the Question's world. You can't be Rorschach. It's they're totally different characters with different mechanisms and different ways of operating. And it's not until he rejects being Rorschach that he finds himself and returns to, you know, who he is. It's a great comic.
Yes, I suppose we more put more into the actual the world building part of it.
Yeah.
Than obviously that means more that he technically created the comic.
Yeah.
Rather than
you know,
using the inserting characters, even though they do bear relations to other characters in the past, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Being able to turn at 985 is pure him. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see where you're coming
from. Hey. Just a thought. I mean, I don't want to state the obvious, but I will. It's owned by Warner Brothers now. You know what they just announced today? They're doing a, it looks like just a Mortal Kombat-esque fighting game called Injustice Gods Among Us.
Yeah.
With the DC characters. There's no plot.
Yeah.
It's just a fighting game.
And, yeah.
And that's...
And it's the new 52 costumes.
Yeah. If you go to the Marvel website, they have a bar on top. Comics is the first one, but there's like six other entries. Movies, TV, characters, games, apps. You know, it's these companies, Disney and Warner Brothers, want to mine their IP for all they can. If you've ever worked for them, they're going to try to pimp your stuff into whatever new medium they can and make some money off of it.
That's right.
Yeah, like a role-playing game.
Yeah, like
role-playing game.
That would be crazy.
Games to make so little money, you know, it is kind of crazy. I mean, why would you waste development time? And so they don't make the game. They let, like, they don't make a role-playing game. They let some other company license the role-playing game. So that Disney,
and they'll go out and hire the best damn writers in the business.
They always do, yeah.
See, they will.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I hate to point this out, but I've seen some comics, some RPG publishers ranting about the Avengers thing. And I don't say anything online. I don't tweet back saying, oh, really? Because at least one of the publishers I know who's publicly ranted so much about Kirby got screwed is a guy whose freelancers have to hound him for payments.
Right.
I'm not going to name any names.
I was thinking about this, and I was trying to explain to some students. We did a showing of the Avengers on my campus, and so I was sort of talking to the students before the film. And, okay, so the movie is going to make like $1 billion. Has it crossed $1 billion yet? I know it was on
Earth. Yes, it has.
So $1 billion, and then, so how many people have seen it? Do we know how many people have seen this movie? Like,
I don't know.
It could be like the same five guys who just never leave the theater.
Yeah.
It could be, but it's probably closer to 100 million, right? I mean, if a movie, if your ticket price is $10, then $1 billion divided by 10 is, I don't know, tens of millions at least have seen this movie. But how many people are going to buy a copy of Thor this month?
You got to understand, unless you're buying the first, maybe the first 12 months of Ultimates, maybe the second 12 months of Ultimates, maybe.
Yeah.
The comics you buy in your store do not bear a large resemblance to what you're seeing on the screen.
Well, it
doesn't look that. Thing. I mean, the new Avengers series they launched, that is the characters from the movie. And I would really love to know how that sits in their sales chart. Because, do kids go in there and go, well, it's the five guys from the movie and buy it? Because
it annoys me. They sell about the average sales, according to Diamond, the average sales for a Marvel and DC comic is around 30,000 copies a month. Now, there are exceptions, of course. I guess Avengers versus X-Men sold 250,000 or something insane like that. But the average sales are 30,000 copies a month.
And is that print or print plus digital? Or?
That's only print. That's Diamond.
Okay.
So, and the thing is that we don't know how many sell digitally. No, everyone's keeping those numbers very close to the vest. And it also does not include graphic novel trade collection sales.
Yeah. Mm.
So we don't know. But, 30,000 is not a lot. I mean, there's 300 million people in this country. So that means, like, one out of every 10,000 people has bought a copy of Thor.
That doesn't sound like a lot, does it?
It's hard to get a hold of. It's hard to find. I don't sell them at Walmart and drugstores anymore. I got to go to a specialty shop. I got to deal with the district.
And this is without opening up the big can of worms of how many people are downloading it illegally.
Yeah, but even if that, well, okay, sure, let's double the number.
Yeah,
5,000 people. I mean, it's still very, very, very small compared to in the Golden Age, when a copy of Captain Marvel or Superman or even Daredevil, for Christ's sakes, and I'm talking about the original Daredevil, not the blind one, would sell 1 million copies a month.
Because you could buy them everywhere.
Well, and the readership was, every soldier, every GI in America and Europe, and their kids, right? I mean, everybody, they couldn't watch television because there wasn't any. They read comics. That's what they did.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I was just trying to talk about my students about this, and I realized that this is where nerd culture has finally completed its motion to mainstream culture, right? I mean, superheroes are no longer nerd culture. When the superhero movie makes $1 billion, that's not a niche anymore. That's mainstream.
Jason, what I suggest to you is the following. Superheroes are not nerd culture. Comics are.
Yeah, exactly.
The people that I know never read a comic book and go, have you seen whatever, Ghost Rider or X-Men? Oh, it's the best thing I've ever seen. I go, you do realize the comic books are, yeah, but the comics are crap. You think, well, it's exactly the same thing literally on the screen. What are you talking about, you mad nut?
And you're right. I mean, we know all the reasons why this is. I mean, there's competition from other entertainment mediums. There's accessibility questions. There's questions of continuity that have become a kind of incrossable barrier. There's all kinds of reasons why this is. Or the fact that the art is just crap. There's a million reasons why you might not like a comic.
Yeah. Speaking of not liking comics, Is anybody on this phone call still reading the New 52? Because except for picking up,
you mean the New 92?
Whatever you want to call it. I actually am not reading anything from DC anymore. I used to be a solely DC guy, but except for I pick up the occasional number one like Earth 2, but I've lost any interest in what's happening in the DC universe. How about you guys?
I'm still getting all the books I was getting when 52 launched, apart from Firestorm, Hawkman, and Red Hood. And I dropped all three of those to make space for Watchmen.
I'm still reading Batwoman. And I'm still reading, I am contractually obligated to read Demon Knights.
Oh, because you're doing a piece on that, right?
Yeah, I already wrote it. I wrote an article on that. And so I had to read, you know, like about nine months of it, all that there was.
Okay, had to read. Are you enjoying it? Because had to read sounds like it was a jewel.
It's not a good comic. It's not a good comic. It has all of the... I've read a bunch of the other 52s, and the problem is Chris, as Professor McLaughlin noted in a previous podcast, the problem here is one of pacing.
Yeah.
That every story has to take 6 to 8 issues to complete so that it can be packaged and put on the shelf as a trade collection. But it also has to be packaged so that it's a 2-hour movie in terms of content. And as a result, you have 120 pages to cover 2 hours of content, and everything moves at this excruciatingly slow pace. JLA being the classic example. And this is the main problem with Demon Knights. And it's a shame because Paul Cornell, who's writing that book, is a fan favorite. You know, he's written Doctor Who episodes and all kinds of stuff that people love.
Some of the best Doctor Who episodes.
And he's really smart. And he's writing a really boring book. And it's just tragic.
The thing I find, because they mentioned that the Demon Knights might be the Daemonites from the Wildstorm days. And that hasn't, none of that has ever materialized. And it's really
it's not about that at all. It's about the Kirby's character, the Demon, and Vandal Savage and a bunch of other characters that Cornell has made up. And
yeah, his
personal take on the Shining Knight, who is certainly the most interesting character in the book because 9 months have gone by and we still don't know what the gender of the character is.
I'm not mistaken, there is an Amazon in there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. There's an Amazon, and she's very straight up. She's very much sort of our Wonder Woman character. And she's kind of cool. I like her. But
she's definitely not Diana's mom.
No. But the Shining Knight personally identifies as male. He refers to himself as a he. He acts like a he. And everybody else can tell that he's a she. This is the exact opposite of Grant Morrison's version of the character, where everybody, including the audience, including the reader, thought that he was a guy until the last issue when it's revealed that he's a she. In Demon Knight, she's like the worst cross-dresser in history. Because he's pretending to be male, but everybody can tell he's a girl.
Oh, I don't know. There's cross-dressers with goatees.
That's
worse. Yeah, that's not convincing.
All right. I yield to the crossover with the goatee. but the point is that we can't resolve what gender the character is. And if Cornell wanted to resolve the character's gender, he would have. So I've only presumed that in 9 months he hasn't because he chooses not to. So it's an interesting character, but I kind of wish that we could figure out what's going on with him, her, it.
Yeah. Chris, how about you? You still reading the 52, 92?
I actually have only changed one book. I dropped Hawkman right before Rob Liefeld took over in an amazing coincidence.
It was shocking, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That story, like, just before we started doing cheap covers.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I picked up the World's Finest and Earth 2, and hopefully get a look at those tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
I hear Superman and Batman are still really good, but I just, yeah.
I have to write a paper on Action Comics, so I'm going to have to catch up on that.
So Superman's not as good as Action, in my opinion. Superman felt very old school with Perez doing it.
Yeah.
But it did kind of... it's got some cool stuff happening in it, but action was kind of typical Morrison. Like, okay, what we're going to do? We're going to tell a story about the Legion of Superheroes coming back in time and not have any reference to anything previously seen in the last 8 issues. Let's do that. That'd be cool.
Tell me what you think about Action Comics. What do you think of it?
What do I think of it? I really like it.
Yeah.
Really like it. I think it was like me and Mike have mentioned before, it's not quite All-Star Superman, but I think it's still pretty damn good.
Do you his presentation of Superman as a kind of working class superhero.
Yeah.
Do you buy that? Does that sound like Superman to you? Do you believe his presentation?
To me, it doesn't. If someone said if that was the, like, that is Superman, I would say no. But when you gauge it as the character, the age of the, like, the actual age of the that Clark is supposed to be, you can understand where he's got this mentality in his head that he has to do this kind of thing to save the common man.
Yep.
But if to say, oh yeah, Superman, oh yeah, he's the guy who beats up muggers, that's not Superman. Yeah, that doesn't seem make so much sense.
It works for you because he's young.
Yes.
Ah, I got it. Okay, it fits in his sort of heroic context that later he'll become...
I've got powers, what can I do? I know, I can go and fight injustice.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, okay. All right. So it makes sense for the character, as you see it. Yeah.
Oh, it makes sense for this version, I would say, yeah.
Yeah. Chris, are you still reading Flash?
Yes, and still enjoying it tremendously. Every time they bring back a new Rogue, and it's doing a great job of playing to us older folks, and also I think satisfying the needs of people that just want to jump into a book. And in fact, of everything I've read, I would defend Flash as being the one book that you could just hand to somebody that's never read a comic in their life, and they could get something out of it.
That's great. Has the top shown up yet?
I'm still waiting on that one, especially after writing my obsessively detailed entry for him for the DC character book. I'm really, really excited to see him come back.
I knew your name, and now I remember why I read it, because I read that little bit about your top reference here. That's really cool, yeah.
Well, thank you. I was starting to worry about myself the 2 days I did nothing but stat up every one of his gimmick tops.
I had one Flash comic when I was a kid. And it was the one where Flash fights the top, and Flash, like, super evolves into, like, Super Flash. Do you remember this episode?
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out that later that actually it was all a big trick, that he did it all with makeup. It wasn't actually super evolved Future Flash at all.
Yeah.
Is that right? I mean, it's been...
That was always the denouement of his stories, was that he was just faking whatever the villain had tried to do to him.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
Yeah, I've read Flash since Wade's run, back when the Impulse was going on at the same time as well, so... That's been a long time since I've read any Flash.
Yeah, well, Wade...
I always liked the character. Super speed is the coolest power ever, so,
Yeah.
Speaking of Wade, he's doing a hell of a job on Daredevil. If you're not reading it, it's a lot of fun.
Those covers are gorgeous.
They really
are. I'll pick up the trades for that, definitely.
I love those covers. Those are genius.
The art's been good. Daredevil's been fun, which I don't think Daredevil's ever been fun. And it's what's well written. It's Mark Waid, for Christ's sakes. Yeah.
I think he owed it to everybody that liked him after what they did to him with the whole kind of becoming the clan of the Ninja Chappie League of those guys and kind of going a bit odd. We'll take him back to what he is actually a good character.
He was supposed to be fun when he was made. I mean, that's how the name Daredevil came, is that he was supposed to be like, the reckless adventurer. And that's how he sort of lingered in as a marginal B character until Frank Miller got a hold of him and said, screw that, and made him the noir hero. But he was supposed to be funny when he was young.
It's kind of, there's this weird cycle when Frank Miller gets a hold of a character. All of a sudden they get really dark, and it's kind of like they stay dark, and other people take a hold of the character and do Frank Miller's shtick, only a lot worse for a few years, then...
Okay, talks about characters have gone dark. Apparently they announced today that Plastic Man's coming back in New 52 in a horror book.
What?
What's that one out? I swear, I think I've just read it, but I swear that's what it comes down to.
You are pulling my leg.
No, I swear it's on there. That's crazy. I love Plastic Man, he's kooky, wacky, but he's not, House of Wax. That's the only thing I can think of was House of Wax. It's going to be House of Plaz,
House of Plaz. All right, now they have to title it that, and they should pay you a royalty.
Yeah, I think that would be cool. Oh. That one there?
Wow, you ain't lying. Comicbook.com. 11 hours ago, Ethan Van Sciver's writing it. With Gail Simone. Okay, I have hope now that Gail Simone's involved.
Well, okay. Why would you do that? If you've got the character Plastic Man, and he's fairly well known. I mean, he had a Saturday morning cartoon series long ago.
We love that.
So if you want to use a Plastic Man, why do you decide to do a horror book with him?
You know, Jason, we're going to ask that question. Why don't we have a Teen Titans Go comic, you know, given the version of the characters most the public knows? Or
I don't, can I toss out a theory? Can I toss out a theory?
Please do.
They hate us?
Well, that's a fact. That's a fact. I mean that's proven beyond a doubt. But one of my favorite movies is Empire Records, and because I feel like I know every single jaded Gen Xer character in it. Yeah. And I especially love the one employee who, you know, looks at her coworkers and goes, "Ooh, shock me, shock me, shock me." You know, it just seems like the new 52 or the new 92, because to me it's like, hey, weren't Image Comics early? Image Comics the best thing ever? But, you know, to me it's just like it's one pathetic attempt to shock us after another. Right. Now, depending on the creator that's handling it, it's come off better or worse.
Right.
But it just seems like, you know, what can we do to get people to talking about our comics? Now, admittedly, after essentially challenging Alan Moore to a fist fight earlier, I'm going to go back and I'm going to go ahead and give the man his due. You know, he's been saying for 2 or 3 years now, why doesn't DC try something radical like, you know, telling good stories?
Yeah.
But yeah, it just really seems like one extended shock me, shock me, shock me, and bringing back Plastic Man as a horror character. Here we go again, shock me,
well,
shock me, shock me.
You know, Gail Simone is a hell of a writer. I'll pick up the first couple of issues of that and see what she does.
Well,
it is, but let's remember, Gail's already walked off of one book because of DC's editorial demands. So
was that with Ethan Scarver as well?
Yeah, that was Firestorm.
That's Firestorm, it was, wasn't it? Exactly. So it seems odd that they can't back up again to do something different. So.
Is Firestorm canceled now? I lost track of it.
No, Firestorm's still going. Well. As far as we know, unless, of course, the Zero issues hit and it will go when they do the JLA relaunch, the main one of the Justice League.
Gail's a tremendous talent, but, you know, it does sort of make you wonder how much of what's on the page is 100% her.
Am I allowed to say that I thought Batgirl was boring?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I realize that I love Simone's work, and I'm God bless her, and I'm glad that she's in the industry, and we need her voice as a comics professional speaking out loud about comics. I think she does enormous good, but I thought her Batgirl was weak sauce. I'm sorry. The villain, the Mirror, was. So he was sort of obviously symbolic,
you're saying you got a very special episode vibe off the whole thing?
Yeah, it was like, well, you know, because the first thing she does is she fights like this home invasion villain, right? Which is, of course, designed to play off of her own famous home invasion. And I didn't get any sense of, I don't know, I guess I should go back and look at it again, but it didn't really appealed to me, and I read like a couple of issues and didn't miss it when I stopped. You know?
And that's precisely the sort of thing I'm talking about right there. I'm just saying that's precisely what I'm talking about there. I mean, what's the whole reason you're supposed to pick up that book is that we've undone one of our landmark stories from the last 20 years. We're shocking you.
Right.
You know, there doesn't seem to be much point to it beyond that, but yeah, here we go. We've shocked you. Enjoy.
I must say, part of the reason for me buying it was to see exactly how they kind of wheedled out of the Oracle thing. And obviously they've done references to the Killing Joke or a situation similar to the Killing Joke.
Yeah.
But not actually the Killing Joke itself. And it would be nice. I think I agree with Jason that I can't think of a single villain that's been in it that's actually I can remember at all now. Apart from when you just mentioned that villain there, now I remember that villain. But I mean, if you put, like, say, Mr. Freeze or Killer Croc in it straight away, then, you know, maybe you might give him something different. But I think they've not created a Batgirl villain yet that is like, okay, this is the go-to guy when we want a bad guy kind of thing. Yeah. So.
And to be fair, I have no problem with restoring Barbara Gordon to, you know, full ambulatoriness. I can see the idea that, well, you know, we've told Oracle stories for 20 years. Let's go back and tell some non-Oracle stories. And I can see the point of
that. That makes me feel really old when you say it's been 20 years. No. I'm just going to go and cry now.
Hasn't it been 20 years? I mean, hasn't...
I think it has.
Yeah. So I can see the editorial point. Like, well, you know, we've told those stories for a while. This is comics. Everything gets reinvented. Let's go tell some stories about Batgirl again. And, you know, if in 10 or 20 more years we want to put her back in the chair, we can.
I'm sorry. That's just. Are you going to do cripple her again?
Well,
I mean, good Lord. That, you know, one of the first lessons I learned about writing was the closer the comedy is at its best when it's closest to tragedy. But I'm sorry, whatever they do to her, when she winds up conveniently paralyzed again, I will fall off of or out of whatever I happen to be sitting at the time laughing my ass off. Because there is no way they're going to be able to extract anything out of that but hilarity. I don't care how brutal they try to make it or how tragic, if she winds up crippled again... That isn't going to be anything other than God, it's like a Family Guy gag. The one where Joe,
Chris, you know what they'll do? They'll just remake the entire universe, and she will have always been crippled. We'll never see a moment where she gets shot again. She will just never have been unshot.
Yeah. Well, you know, if they want to blow up this universe, I got a lighter to light the fuse.
Well, yeah, it was actually 24 years ago on the. if you think about it, there were a lot of characters, B-listers, who were in wheelchairs in the 90s. Jon Stewart was in a wheelchair for a long time. Moon Knight Sidekick Frenchie was in a wheelchair. Barbara Gordon.
Yeah,
there are a couple others. I'm not going to throw out Professor Xavier because, you know, he's in and out of that chair so much. But, it was kind of a thing.
Anyway, my only point was that it's okay to say that you want to tell stories about Barbara Gordon, who can be Batgirl again, but only if they're good. I mean, if they're not good, then you've lost a good character and not replaced it with anything of value.
I will probably pick up the trade on Batgirl. I just didn't feel compelled to pick up another issue. I mean, I love Gail Simone, but I picked up 5 or 6 of them, and I was like, this month I'm not going to. Maybe I'll flip to the trade when it comes out in a year and see what that's like. But
the art is so New 52-ish. You know, it's all like Jim Lee.
Yeah, yeah.
Studios.
Pretty nice art, though.
Well, you like it, but see, to me, it just rubs me as a house style that I don't like.
We are going down the World Storm route of art selection, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, they pick. You know, when you're running the company, you pick an artist and you tell all of your artists to draw like that guy. And you know, for a while it was Kirby, and then it was somebody else. You know, but now it's Jim Lee, and you have to be a really big name artist to get out of that, to not be told draw like Jim Lee. You know, and if you're J.H. Williams or whatever and you're on Batwoman, you can draw however the hell you want because you're J.H. Williams. But most of them are drawing like Jim Lee, and I just don't care for it.
So that's funny enough, you mentioned Batwoman. I actually didn't buy Batwoman because I didn't enjoy the Batwoman in the old detective stuff.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know what it was about it, but there was just something that, I don't know if it was just pacing, or it's just because we had all that kind of split page.
Yeah.
She's Kathy Kane?
Yeah, Kate.
Yeah, I see. I'm getting it fluffy. If I'd have picked it up, I probably would have enjoyed it. But it was one of the decisions, do I get it, do I not get it? And literally out of all the Bat books, Dark Knight didn't get picked up, and Batwoman didn't get picked up, and Batwing.
Well, I read Batwoman because I've been addicted to J.H. Williams ever since Promethea.
He's a great artist.
Yeah.
And I love the way he does page layout.
Mm-hmm.
And it's confusing, and it's not the easiest to read book in the world. And you show it to a new reader, and they're like, they don't even know how to read it. You know, so I totally understand the difficulties of the book.
But see, the funniest thing, because I always thought the bits where the actual artwork for the Batgirl parts looked nicer than the bits for the Kathy Kane parts. Why do you draw like the top bit all the while? That's much nicer. So, it's a bit awkward.
And I also read it because of its social commentary, because it's a character about, you know, an out woman who's a former Marine who was discharged from the Marines because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And so I read it kind of for its social awareness, you know, for whatever that's worth.
See, that's interesting. Going back to the whole Adam Scott thing.
Yeah.
Not a massive fuss about Batwoman now being a gay character since the actual initial relaunch of the character.
That's right.
I find that odd. I find that there's not like somebody kind of almost like waving a flag saying, yes, this is a gay character, kind of buy this book if you're interested in this type of character. I think rather than creating a new character, push the existing characters.
There was a big deal about that one being gay when she first appeared in the 52 weekly series.
Yeah.
But when Rucka took over, and I believe it was Rucka that reinvented her, what he did was is he made her less of an obvious sex object. Because she was first created in the 52 as a kind of lipstick lesbian character, a kind of really sexed up woman who wore high heels and had the long red hair and everything, and she was a very sexy lesbian male fantasy character. And what Rucka said, well, let's get rid of the heels, let's give her a costume that makes sense, let's make the red hair a wig, let's dress her in rockabilly fashions, let's make her macho, let's make her butch, you know. And that made her a lot less of a sex object and made her a lot more interesting as a character, but also made her a lot less controversial.
See, I'm surprised that either she took the transformation to the new 52, or the Batgirl got reinvented, because literally, they're the same character. But
yeah.
They fulfill that female version of Batman,
yep,
and have a Batwoman and a Batgirl. It just seems really odd. I thought they would have said, well, don't bring Batgirl back, we'll keep as Oracle, but we'll really push Batwoman as the female Batman. That's what I would have seen. But
well, I think as we've talked about before, this whole new 52 thing seems to have happened so quickly. You know, it seems like a fiat editorial decision that happened in the middle of Flashpoint.
Wasn't Batwoman, the original series, announced before the New 52, wasn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Because someone said there was pages like that had the other version of Batgirl in it that got re-edited.
The Batwoman book was already like, there were like two issues in the can already, and they decided to announce the New 52, and so the book just sort of kept on rolling. You know, basically untouched by the new 52.
Kind of like Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, if you really want to talk about the decision making that went into this, it's already a confirmed fact that this was originally supposed to happen at the end of Final Crisis. But they pulled back at the last second, and I can totally see the DC higher ups. After a few months of slagging sales and sliding sales, let's push the panic button. Let's reboot now. It really does show every sign of being a rush panic job.
So
picking up an already discarded idea.
Yeah. So it wasn't an accelerated decision. It was a delayed one.
Yeah, and a panicked one at that.
Well, what I find interesting as well, though, is that the way, although technically it is a reboot, they actually gave it a story, like, to reboot it. Rather than just saying, okay, we're cutting issues off and we're relaunching, kind of like Ultimate Universe style, they gave it story reasons for it to happen, although it wasn't the best reasons. But also we've had, like, in the new 52 free comic book day thing, we've had Pandora, like, even reference, like, oh, the old universe or something like that. And it's like, okay, so they kind of know that something's happened in story, so there is still potential that they may know that something's wrong. And yeah, obviously not necessarily going to say we're going to go back to the old style stuff, but I think doing it that way is much better than just saying, right, we're stopping and we're restarting and it's all gone different. I think that's
always kind of, and it's best when they did Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, they do these stories that explain the reboot and they give you a continuity for the reboot, and they make a good story out of it. That's all we want.
Yeah, true.
But good stories are hard. It's so much easier just to shock people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they're making Flashpoint into a cartoon.
Really?
That's one of the projects on the slate for DC Animated. Yeah, I was kind of surprised too.
Yeah, we got told about that when the guy that voices Batman slipped up and mentioned it.
Yeah.
That's really odd.
Yeah. Wow. The most fantastic story I've read in the last few years. Now it's going to move. It'll be waiting.
Exactly. What do you do? Do you have a scene at the beginning where everyone's normal DC Universe, and then a scene at the end where everyone's a new 52 Universe? Because apart from that, that's the entire point of Flashpoint, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's no real know, oh, Barry Allen tries to get his powers back by scalding himself with acid. It just seems, you know, oh, hey, what a good idea.
You know what they should do? They should really capture the ambiance with it. Like, record all the voice actors after they've only had about 2 hours sleep, so they're just yawning through the whole thing. That's the ultimate. Yeah. It was just such a poorly told story, especially with the with the effects that it was going to have. I mean, because right away, you know, none of these changes are going to take. You know, none of them are going to last. None of them are going to matter. They published about 75 more books than they really needed to, and most of them wind up being crappy and inconsequential.
Very true. Well, the full book, yeah.
And even the main storyline. I mean, the only thing that worked me up to a good solid meh was the idea of Thomas Wayne being Batman.
Right.
That I fought up to a meh for. But the rest of it, go ahead and read. Go ahead and hit the reset button. Get rid of these characters we'll never see again.
See, part of the thing that annoyed me more than anything else was the Booster Gold tie into Flashpoint, because the Booster Gold Flashpoint, he knew that something had gone wrong.
Yeah.
And then they had the character that he found there that he helped rescue, and everyone was saying, oh, that character on the Justice League, the lineup, this woman's been pulled from the Flashpoint universe into the new universe. And then they relaunched Justice League International, and there's no reference to him remembering anything. It's just simply they've completely disregarded everything. And that was the point. He was supposed to be this character that could travel to parallel timelines and parallel universes, but once he goes back to his original, he completely forgets he was there in the first place.
Well, you know, this miniseries, Lois Lane and the when she was tied in with the Revolution against the Amazons in England, Dan Emmett was writing that. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. So, guys, we're about coming up on over an hour.
Okay.
Let's go around the table and everyone name one comic you're really enjoying right now, since we've been slagging everything for the last 45 minutes. Adrian, starting with you.
Oh, crikey, that's a tough one. let me just go through the books and have a look. I would have said OMAC, but that's just been canned. So. Okay, I will say my usual one because you know how much I love my Westerns. I will say All-Star Western. There you go.
Okay, cool. Jason, what are you liking these days?
All right, so I'm going to send everybody to the back.
Jason, you're breaking up, man.
Everybody that watched Avengers, you all saw a little glimpse of the villain up. Yeah, my sound's not very good. You're breaking up with me, too. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. For those of you that all watched Avengers, at the very end of the film, there's a glimpse of the villain, the secret mastermind villain behind everything. I have to spoil it so I can tell you what to read. But that's Thanos, right? You all know this already. So everyone's saying that that the next story is going to be the Infinity Gauntlet. Okay, the Infinity Gauntlet is boring. Go back to the... Go back to the far better Thanos story, the 1977 Thanos stories that were in the Avengers Annual, Marvel 2-in-1, and Spider-Man, Marvel Team-Up, number 55. And this is the Death of Thanos storyline, when he decides to court death by building a weapon that can knock out a star and thereby killing everybody on Earth and giving this dude death as a courtship present. Jim Starlin's first masterpiece. Go read that book.
Okay, cool. Chris, what do you say?
I'm sorry, I'm just taken aback by the fact that our hot recommendation is a 35-year-old comic.
I was going to say something similar, but that's...
And I'm not saying he's wrong, but I'm just saying, you know, that just says way much more than I think maybe he even intended there.
Well,
I say The Flash every time, so let's just assume that I say The Flash, but I'm going to say something in addition to that, just to say that I don't be boring and say The Flash again.
Okay.
But, I want to give a big fist bump to James Robinson for at least the first issue of Earth 2, because honestly, I got so utterly depressed at the pre-press of that, in that, wow, they're going to bring back the Justice Society so they can play second fiddle to yet another Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman book.
Yeah.
And I thought that was actually, I mean, okay, granted, it's the same type of shock stuff that I've been criticizing this whole podcast, and I will own that, but here's a shock that actually has a chance to make the book better, because here's a book where the Justice Society, those characters, actually have a chance to shine.
Yeah.
So I congratulate them for at least making it a shock that seems to at least have the possibility of paying off for something better. So let me say that good about that book.
Is it a well-written book?
I haven't read it yet, but I do know that big spoiler, and I just wanted to say a big shout out to that one. If you want something I'm actually reading, Green Lantern: New Guardians will not set the world on fire, but it's an entertaining little read, and I've enjoyed where they've gone and where they're heading.
Okay.
Yeah, let me just say something for Earth 2, another good thing. Dual pistol wielding Hawkgirl. Okay. That's just all I want to say.
Yeah.
All right, cool, cool. And I'm gonna go be the lone Marvel zombie in the crowd and mention I've been pimping Daredevil like every other podcast. I'm gonna talk about it.
Deservedly so.
You've been reading it, Chris?
I have seen like some previews and stuff like that. I haven't read a Marvel comic in 30 years, but I've read snippets of it here and ago, and I like what it's going for. And Mark Waid is just way too talented for his own sake sometimes. And really, this is him just showing off how really good he is.
Well, Avenging Spider-Man, I've been reading it, and it's almost like Marvel Team-Up. Everything's pretty self-contained, and boy, a lot of great writers have done, they've only had maybe 8 issues so far, and Zeb Wells, Greg Rucka, Mark Waid, Catherine Immonen have written it, it's done in one. Spider-Man and a dude, someone else team up, they fight somebody, they quip along the way, and it's just fun, and I'm really digging it, so I would recommend that to everybody. And I wish
and two creators, the current DC administration ran out of their company. Yeah.
I really wish DC had a book like this, where Nightwing every month teams up with somebody, they run across Gotham, just beating guys up and flipping back and forth, and then you're done.
Last year, I was never really always brave in the bold. And done that. We've got National Comics coming up with like one shot characters. I'm really surprised Brave and the Bold did not make it.
Well, if you read the J. Michael Straczynski run on Brave and the Bold, you know why that comic is not coming back anytime soon.
It wasn't
soon.
That cool, but it was nice to see all the characters that never got any footage anywhere else in something. But
And I agree, as long as Mark Waid was writing it.
There you go.
Okay, guys. Well, I have to finalize wedding plans, so.
Yay! Congrats, Mike.
Oh, thank you. We've got to figure out the menu. So,
shrimp.
Cocktail weenies. Cocktail weenies.
Speaking of which, I'm hungry.
All right. This is a good place to end then. So, hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the BAMF podcast, and we will catch you next time. Everybody say goodbye.
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 Bye.
All right. And we'll sign off.